All right. Well, I'm glad you guys talked about your summer, but I wanted to just kind of like give you enough anxiety when I first asked you the question, like share your deepest, darkest secret, because some of you are thinking like, okay, I picked the wrong day to come to church, right? Absolutely not. I'm never coming back here again or whatever it may be. But have you ever been in a church environment where they actually made you do that? No? Good, good. Or maybe they tried to put you in an environment where maybe you just meet somebody for the first time and you kind of have to share pretty intimately about your life or something like that. You've got, don't give me the whole story, Mel, but just.
In seminary, we had because we were doing deliverance.
Okay.
So we did have to share
some things.
It was transparent.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. So there was an occasion for that. Hopefully it was done in an appropriate way. But I was talking with my sister-in-law. We went for my nephew's baptisms 2 weeks ago, and she was talking, there's about 25% of this new church plant came from a different church where they would often do this. They would throw people in like a small group, and the leader would like get everybody to like kind of just share very intimately, but not very appropriately in the sense of they just met each other and then they would kind of switch groups and different things like that. And so I don't know if you've ever been a part of that before, but it's trying to reach for a good thing. Hey, we're trying to grow closer. We're trying to be vulnerable with one another, but it's often done in not the right context or not the right setting. Because the truth is that real vulnerability can't be forced. Right, you can't force that upon somebody. You can't like microwave it. It takes time for it to happen. At the same time, I flipped the question and said, "Hey, what are you looking forward to this summer?" Not a bad question. Maybe you got to know a little bit about somebody, but that's kind of like a surface level question, right? That's kind of like an easy question. How are you? You know, what's going on? And that's fine. But our hearts want to go deeper. Right? Our souls, we want to be known more than just, hey, what are we looking forward to this particular summer? And so there's this balance of, hey, no, you can't share too much in an inappropriate setting, but we want to go deeper than where we often are on the surface level. And so we're going to talk about that today. Think about a time in your life when somebody actually saw that you trusted, that you loved, that kind of saw beyond the surface level and was able to identify, hey, something's going on in your heart, something's going on in your soul, or you were able to share that in an appropriate way, right? Can you think about how that made you feel? It made you feel seen, right? It made you feel connected to that person. You guys know that my dad was with us for a long while, and on Friday he went back to Alabama, and I know he slept in last Sunday, so he didn't get to come to church, but I was having some emotions with that the last 2 days or so. And I think Emily was picking up on that. And so Emily, she called one of my friends and said, hey, you need to take Jesse out to lunch. All right, he needs to talk about this. All right, so go. And so my friend called me and I kind of picked up on, you know, they were trying to, they were playing me here a little bit. But, you know, I could play along, you know, but that's okay. But my friend, he knew that I was in need. And so we had lunch and I was able to process that and kind of talk through that experience. And so, you know, that was like, okay, I feel like there's people in my life that they see what's going on and they make an effort to reach out. And that makes a difference in who we are and what we do. So we started this new series last week, Friendship in a Lonely World, the relationships we need and the habits that form them. And we talked about the importance of friendship. We looked back, we used the Genesis story, the story of creation, and saw how it's not good for us to be alone, right? Genesis 2:18. God said it's not good for man or for humankind to be alone. And remember what we said about this passage is the Lord was saying, it is good, it is good, it is good. 7 times, right? I create the stars, I create the light and the dark, I create the animal. Everything is created, it's good. And then bam, we get hit with this, it is not good. But we also remember that like, everything was perfect at that time, right? This is before the fall. This is before sin enters the world. And yet God's saying, hey, we still need human connection. yes, we have this important relationship with God that we can be loved by God and known by God, but at the same time, God created us for relationship with other people. But we talked about how loneliness and isolation, how we don't just sort of drift into friendship, we actually drift into isolation. And we talked about how our culture, as connected as we feel like we are, right? You just pull out your phone and there's you can get anything you want. You can connect to anyone you want. You can message anybody. Oftentimes our soul still feels disconnected because group chats or scrolling or having followers or whatever is not really what satisfies the soul. I was using a resource, Justin Early's book, Made for People, and he defines loneliness this way. He says, loneliness is the feeling is the feeling of being a person who used to have friends. Oh, I told somebody that was outside the church, and they're like, man, that's depressing. Do you really want to use that definition? But the feeling of a person who used to have friends, and last week we looked at how we remembered a time in our life when we had a best friend or what that experience was like, and we recognized that, yeah, we still may have friends today, but some of us struggle with friendship just because of the life that we live or the priorities that we have or different things in life have happened. And so I want to just take that conversation a little deeper today. And I want us to begin to look at what are some ways that we can begin to develop healthy friendships in our lives. What are the components that make up healthy friendships? And so we're going to look at this idea of vulnerability today. Okay, it's not the only thing that applies to friendships, but I want to look at what it looks like to take that step and to be able to, maybe not in a church group setting, to actually share those deeper things in our lives and in our hearts. So if we go back to the Genesis story, which I think Genesis, we said, it gives us really a theological framework for who we are, how we were made, how we were created. Yes, it kind of sort of tells the origin story of how we got here, but even more important than that, it tells us truths about who we are today. And we see in Genesis 2:25, it says that Adam and his wife, they were both naked and they were not ashamed. Now, obviously there's a physical component to that, but I think that there's a theological and a deeper component that we could say that Adam and Eve, they were fully known. They were known. There was nothing hidden about them. They weren't, you know, curated. There were no filters. There was nothing that was performance. They were fully known and they were fully loved in the garden in that moment. And so what we see is these first human relationships, there's a sense of openness that's taking place, not about performance, not about hiding. And so as we apply that to our lives, what we say is, hey, we want to be known. We want people to know us fully. We don't want to feel ashamed, and we don't want to hide ultimately. Right? There's something about being fully known and fully loved. And if we play on this a little bit, there's a difference between being fully known but not being fully loved. Right? Think about a situation where maybe somebody knew something about you. You were fully known, but you weren't loved. You know, we see this kind of in our age of technology right now, right? Anybody, you got to watch out with what you're doing in life because people can pull out a phone and they can, you know, see you out in public doing something. They don't love you. They're going to post it on and then people feel shame, right? That's kind of the broad scale. But maybe something in life, maybe a work situation, a failure that you had, maybe you aren't loved at work. And in quite the same way, you make a mistake, people forget about that mistake, they talk about that mistake, you're feeling shame because you're known, but you're not loved. But then the opposite side, and it's when you're fully loved, but you're not fully known. And that sounds good in one hand, right? I'm fully loved. But what happens if you're fully loved, but you're not fully known, it's exhausting because you're still hiding. Right? Think about it. You're in a group or you have a friendship and this person, you know, loves you and they're just like, man, you know, you're just the best person ever. And you're sitting back there and saying, but they don't know this about me. Right? They don't know that about me. And I love when I'm, you know, when I'm in a group with some of my best friends and we meet some new people and, you know, maybe this person starts to like, man, you know, Jesse, you're pretty cool. You know, and they start to give me some compliments and stuff. It doesn't happen often. Okay. But then like my best friend's like, bro, you don't know this guy. All right, let me tell you. And then they tell a story because they actually know me, right? And so they bring me down to earth. All right, it ever happened to you? You can use a friend example. You could definitely use a spouse example. Spouses are great at that. They bring you back down to earth. But so people say, oh, I love this person. They're great, but they don't know you. And it's actually exhausting. But there's a but when you merge these two together, when you're in a friendship where you're fully known, somebody knows everything about you, right? They know your mistakes, they know your personality, they know your failures, they know your tendencies, but they still love you anyway. That's like worship. That's like real friendship that takes place. Now, that's not to say that friend just says, hey, you can stay where you are. Right, the gospel is a gospel where it finds you where you are, but then it also, and Jesus loves you so much wherever you are, but he also loves you that he wants to push you. He wants to change you into the person that you're called to be. And a friend does that as well. But when you find friendships where, hey, this person knows everything about you and they still love you, that's, I think, where freedom begins. And I think that's where our heart aches for. Now, we can find that in our relationship with God, obviously. That's an important piece. We can find that with family. But I think also even in friendship, we can find this. I remember when I first went to college, I was able to not pick, but find out who my roommate was before that summer. And so when you first meet your roommate, you're trying to put on your best face, right? And so, I think we actually... I guess I am old. We wrote each other a letter, I didn't know. Some guy from Ohio, I had to write him a letter or something. I think I gave him my cell phone number and then we got on the call or whatever. Man, that dates me here. And so we started to talk a little bit in the summer. And then when we met in early August and we began to build this friendship, you're kind of putting your best foot forward, right? You make your bed, you do the dishes, you're having these conversations, all this stuff. If Emily and I, we were dating long distance, so if we got in a fight or something, I would take it outside and we'd talk on the phone. I wouldn't do it in front of my friend. I wanted to make everything look pretty good. And that was fine. It was fun to meet this guy, Steve, and had to begin to build this friendship. But I remember it was maybe 6 weeks in, we stayed up late one night. And we began to really actually get off the surface and begin to actually tell our story, right? And we began, and I believe it was a conversation kind of around some family things that were going on in both of our lives. But we began to actually unpeel the onion and talk about what was really going on in our life. And that began this process of a deeper friendship, not just a surface level friendship, where we were actually known and we were beginning to love and care for one another. Now, the downside of that is then we started to get more comfortable. And so he stopped doing the dishes, after a while. And it's okay. But we begin that friendship there in that way. But as we talked about last week, sin doesn't want us to be fully known and fully loved. Sin wants to isolate us. Right? Sin wants to, we sin more often in isolation. And then when we do sin, we feel like we want to isolate from community even more. And that's what we see in the Genesis story, right? This hiding that takes place. We recognize the irony of Adam and Eve hiding from God and God saying, where are you? Where are you? But they do that. I go back to, Dan, you and I were talking about Dietrich Bonhoeffer a couple of weeks ago, this pastor and this guy that was in Germany during the period of Hitler, and he wrote some great works on the aspect of Christian community, and he talks about in some ways how the church sort of fakes it. How we are actually sinners, and we need to recognize that we are sinners, because when we act like we're all perfect here, we come to church and we're all perfect, we're really not building Christian community. But one of the things he says about isolation and about what sin does with us is he says this. He says, he who is alone with his sin is utterly alone. He who is alone with his sin is utterly alone. This idea that when we make mistakes, when we sin against God or against other people, there's this deep feeling of isolation that happens, and the enemy loves for that to happen. It's amazing who we become when we begin to drift away from community. It's amazing how quickly the secrecy reshapes us, or how we become disconnected, even when we're surrounded by people. Right? Sometimes we've all done this, I think, in our own way, but sometimes you'll continue to come to church, you'll continue to invest in your community, you'll continue for a season, and then you finally get the courage to share, and somebody says, I had no idea. And because sometimes we just continue to push off this hiding that takes place. So how do we get away from these created versions of ourselves, right? The funny version or strong version or spiritual version, the I'm good version, right? What does it look like to move closer to vulnerability? One definition of vulnerability is that vulnerability is to be capable of being wounded. To be capable of being wounded. Well, that sucks. Who wants to do that? Right? I mean, no wonder vulnerability is terrifying, because who wants to be wounded in their lives? Right? It means to be vulnerable means to risk being rejected, to be misunderstood, to be someone to judge you or betray you or disappoint you. And so vulnerability is terrifying if it's not done in love. Right? If you have to be vulnerable in a context where you're not surrounded by love, then it should be terrifying, because you can be wounded. But if it's done in the context of love, if you begin to develop a friendship with somebody and you sense that there is connection there, and there's a willingness to go deeper, and this person cares about you, and you begin to be more vulnerable with them, then in love, it changes things. When we find that friend, we have to push ourselves. So let me just kind of give an example of what this looks like, because I think there's a difference between when we begin to find those friendships. There's a difference between sharing and being vulnerable. So, you know, sharing is just like updating people on your life. You know, hey, this summer I'm going to go watch the World Cup at the beach on vacation. Those are the three things I heard, you know, that were good, right? And that's fine. We share about our lives all the time, right? We come into this building and hey, how was your week? What's going on in your life? What's going on next week? And we begin to share our lives. But vulnerability goes deeper, and it's actually letting people into our lives. Right? So, you know, I gave the example of my dad, and I would say, hey, sharing is, hey, my dad left on Friday, right? I gave you an update on what was going on. But if I'm vulnerable, I'm going to share how that makes me feel. And the joys, the challenges, the mixed emotions, all the things, right? The questions, all these things that I would begin to share in that way. And so a couple weeks ago, I had a couple of guys at our house. It was like, it was a random Tuesday night or something like that. And we waited till the kids went to bed. So the guys were there from like 9 p.m. to like 1 a.m., all right, we paid the price the next day. You know, we were tired, but we were around this fire pit, and we began the conversation like anyone else would begin the conversation, right? How was your week? And the World Cup came up. You know, we're beginning to talk and have these conversations. But then, I don't know, maybe about 30 minutes into the conversation, it's like, okay, how is this the rest of the night going to go? Are we just going to continue to shoot the breeze? Are we just going to continue to share? Or are we going to begin to get vulnerable? And so one of us asked, you know, hey, how are things going in life right now? You know, one of those questions that you kind of, it's that awkward turn of the conversation, you know, but someone has to do it. And so we began to shift the conversation into more vulnerability. And then what often happens is somebody shares for a little bit, and then somehow it gets back to joking and fun and sharing. And then you have to kind of say, okay, let's get back to vulnerability. And you, someone shares, and then you, it's too much, and you got to go back. You know, it's kind of this back and forth that takes place, right? It's just men. Okay. All right, Emily, here you go. Come on. Come preach to us. So maybe it's just a guy thing. Let's make a slide about that, okay? Might just be a guy thing that we can't handle that much vulnerability at one time. But there was intention that had to happen in us having these conversations. But it led to, I think, really us feeling known and feeling like the things that were going on in our lives. One of the things that Early says in his book that I really appreciate is he says, friendship is not the place you go once you finally get your life together. Friendship is where we process life in real time. I think we read that and it makes sense. But just again, go think about some of your relationships. Think about some of your life where sometimes we're like, I don't want to make that phone call yet because I just need to figure this thing out first. I just need to figure out how to handle this situation, or I need to get my act together before I make that phone call to that particular friend, or before I get together with that person. It's not about us getting fixed up and then having friendship. It's in the context of friendship where we actually experience the gospel, right? It's where you come to a friend, you say, hey, I messed up. And that friend says, yeah, you really did mess up. You're stupid. Why did you do that? I love you. Now, you need to go to apologize to this person and that person and that person or whatever it may be, right? You need to go to therapy. You need to read this book. You need to do whatever it is that you need to do. But friendship is a place where God can actually bring about healing in our lives. He can bring about healing. And it's where grace, I think, becomes more tangible for us. I mentioned this last week, and I'll say it again because I think it's so important. Pastor Craig Rochelle often says that forgiveness happens when we confess to God, but healing happens when we confess to one another. That, yes, we need to give it to God. We need to confess the things that are on our hearts and that are in our lives to God, but there's something tangible and powerful happens when we speak it out to one another, when we just verbalize to our friends, hey, this is what is going on in my life. I do want to just caution and go back to kind of my joke at the beginning of the message that vulnerability cannot be forced. We have to be careful with vulnerability. And so as I'm sharing this with you, I don't want you to feel this pressure that, hey, I need to now be vulnerable with everybody in my life. Right, I need to share everything that's going on, even if I don't have that relationship. Because sometimes churches, we recognize the loneliness, we recognize the isolation, and we try to force it, but it never works to force it. And so if I was going to put it this way, I would say that you're not to share everything with everyone, but what you are to do is you're to share everything with someone. Okay? Alex, I think we've got a slide on that, just that language there. But you're not to share everything with everyone. We know people like that, right? You just meet somebody and they like give you their whole life story. You're like, whoa, that's too much for me. Like, thank you for sharing that, but that's a little much. But we are to find somebody in our life that we can share everything with so that we can be fully known and fully loved. We can't force this sort of intimacy. The friendships that we're trying to develop, right, they take time, they take trust, they take consistency, they take forgiveness, they take shared life together. And so we have to cultivate it. Some of you are in a season where you already have that friend and you just need to be more intentional to maybe move from sharing to vulnerability. You know, you only see each other, you know, once a month or something like that, and you spend 2 hours sharing, and then you have 10 more minutes before you have to go before you can be vulnerable. You just need to say, hey, look, we need to get together. We can share for 10 minutes, but then we need to jump in and begin to talk about what's really going on in our hearts. Others of us, maybe we don't have somebody that we feel comfortable doing this with yet. And what we need to do is just be more intentional to kind of get the feelers out, you know? I need to say, hey, Emmanuel, do you want to go to lunch? And I got to test them out here, you know, and see if I like this guy, if I can trust them. You know, drop a little hint or something and see if he tells Tess and Tess tells Emily and it comes back to me, you know? I just got to try it out. See if it works or not. I'm just kidding, bro. Right? You kind of have to just spend some time with people and see the kind of connection that you make. Early mentions one of his stories. Friendship can often be awkward, especially early on. And he said that he was meeting with this guy on his front porch for like the first or second time. And the guy said to him, I think something's happening here. Like there's some sort of friendship that's budding. And I think we should be more intentional taking time. Like he literally said it like that. It's a little awkward, right? You know, like little no pressure, right? But I think we should be friends. And what he said is sometimes we have to name these things even, right? And take a risk and begin to build and develop these sorts of friendships. I want to kind of close looking at just one example of Jesus. We talked last week about how Jesus came and said, I no longer call you enemies. I no longer call you, I call you my friend, right? He brought not only salvation into our lives, but he brought that the opportunity for a real friendship to take place between us and between God, which is an amazing thing. If you look at, we may look at it in a couple weeks, but Abraham and Moses experienced this sort of friendship with God, which is an amazing thing. It's the only, I think Christianity is the only religion that really understands our relationship with God in this way. But Jesus again and again invited those closest followers into this idea of friendship. He says in Matthew's gospel, Matthew 26, 38, he's going to the cross, right? He's just hours away from experiencing death. And he's sitting in the Garden of Gethsemane and he says, my soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Stay here and keep watch with me. So he invited those closest followers into this vulnerable, intimate moment. And there's so much that can be said here, right? This is the God of the universe, Jesus Christ. He knows the end of the story, right? On one hand, he knows that he has to do this. He knows what it's going to cost him, but that there's going to be resurrection, that there's going to be life. But yet in that moment, he's feeling that human pain of knowing what he has to do. In this same scene in the Gospels, he's praying, God, your will be done, but gosh, could you do this a different way? Could your will be different? Would you let this cup pass from me? So there's intimacy with the Father, being honest about his emotions, but then there's intimacy with his friends. Stay here and keep watch with me. Now, what I did not include is that he had bad friends, and they fell asleep on him like three times. but we often fall asleep on Jesus too. But if Jesus needed friendship, if he needed somebody to walk alongside with, right? If he had to be open, if he could not carry the sorrow alone, then think about how much more we need it. Think about how much more we need friendship in our life. We need to be able to have somebody that says, I can't take this anymore. I don't know what I'm going to do. Would you just come and be with me? Would you go out to coffee with me? I just need to vent. Would you stay on the phone? Let's go down to the shore for a day. Whatever it might be, what does it look like to not hide what we're experiencing, but actually ask for it and call it out? That's the invitation that we have today with this idea of friendship. I invite the worship team to come up, but What I want you guys to hear today is not that you're to tell everyone your deepest, darkest secret. But what I want us to do, what the invitation is to stop living completely unknown. To actually be able to find people in our lives where we can share what is going on in that deeper way. Because that's what our heart longs for. That's what we are moving towards when we begin to develop real friendships in our lives. So do me a favor, just close your eyes. And I want you just to ask yourself, where have I been hiding? Ask yourself, what version of myself do I constantly project? Who in my life actually knows me deeply? Where might God be inviting me into a deeper friendship? Maybe there's a name, maybe there's a face. Maybe there's not, and you just need to give it to God and say, Lord, would you open up some friendships? Would you open up some relationships that I can begin to be vulnerable with? What would it look like to stop pretending in your life? Lord, you know our hearts today, and you know the wrestlings that we have had in our own friendships. Just having conversations this week with people as we started this series on friendship, we all feel a deep desire and a deep need to develop friendships in our lives. That the current of our culture is going to push us towards loneliness, it's going to push us towards isolation. And yes, God, we seek you out. We want a robust relationship with you, but God, you've created us for friendship. You've created us for relationship with others. And so today I pray, would you give us, the congregation of Kairos, would you give us as people the courage to pursue vulnerable friendships? Would you give us the ability to be honest, to seek out healthy friendships, to not stay in the dark, to not stay in the hiding? Would you help us stop believing the lie that we have to have it all figured out before we can move toward friendship? That we can actually bring our broken selves, our messed up selves, to our friends. Would you help us, Lord, create a culture here in our church where people don't feel pressure, no longer feel pressure to pretend? We want deep relationships here at this church. But we don't want to force it, Lord. We want your Holy Spirit to move in us as we begin to build friendships, as we begin to be open with one another. And so would you naturally bring that about through your Holy Spirit, Lord? Recognizing that friendship, it's not always built on the same life stage. It's not always built on common interests or people that on the surface just seem to get along. But in this context, in the church, it's built on so much more. It's built on you, on a relationship with you. You call us your friends, Lord, and you showed us the way by inviting us to keep watch with you. And so help us to keep watch with one another. Help us to be that space for others where they can be known and loved, that we can help them experience the gospel. And we can push them forward through the power of the gospel. So Lord, we're just going to spend the next few minutes in worship. And I want us to just sort of imagine ourselves at the garden with Jesus. And Jesus is struggling. Jesus is carrying the weight of the world. And we're next to him. And we're worshiping besides him, worshiping the Father. Maybe in these next few moments, friends, you need to just stay right where you are. And just stay seated and pray or worship. Maybe you want to stand and lift up your hands. Maybe you want to go back to that person that you were sitting next to earlier and maybe ask them to pray for you about something. I'm going to invite Pastor Dan to come up with me over here on the side. And if you would like for us to pray with you during this time, you can do that as well. But however you need to worship, however you need to spend some time with the Lord right now, let's do that.